Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, July 16th. I'm Ray Graff. Today it's the Copyright Forum, and joining us to answer your questions about protecting your writing, music, and art are Paul Rapp, Polly Law, and Bill Westwood. So if you have a question about intellectual property, copyright law, fair use, etc., what's in the public domain, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. That's the email. The number is 800-348-2551. Copyright today. Paul, Polly, Bill, and your calls coming up right after the news. Why, hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's the Copyright Forum today, and we've assembled our usual great panel to answer your questions. Polly Law is past president of the Graphic Artist Guild, an organization focused on the rights of artists. She's a designer, illustrator, and artist. Bill Westwood is one of the country's leading medical illustrators, professional member, past president of the Association of Medical Illustrators. Paul Rapp is an intellectual property lawyer and writer. He represents musicians, writers, fine artists, and businesses involved in the creative economy. If you have a question about intellectual property today, give us a call right now, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you may email us if you wish, voxpop@wamc.org. Hello, gang. How are we?
Hey.
Hello.
Hey.
Cool enough for you, Polly Law?
In here, yes.
Okay, that's what I'm trying to keep the guests fresh. Hey, how's the art going? What are you doing?
Well, I am preparing. In 1 week, I will be on a plane to Scotland for a 2-week artist retreat.
Oh, cool.
Nice.
Very
yes.
cool. Well, that should be fun.
And the temperature yesterday in Edinburgh, a broiling 67
Ooh,
degrees.
Now you're talking.
Ooh, that's nice. Paul Rapp, what's up with you, man? Relaxing?
Tired of living and scared of dying. You know? Don't I say that every time we come here?
I don't know.
I don't know if you've said
but,
that before.
Yeah, I'm keeping busy.
You
I'm
might have violated
fun.
Someone's copyright by saying that. Sure. Bill Westwood, what's happening?
I'm getting ready to go to the Association of Medical Illustrators annual meeting next week in Rochester, New York, and going crazy this week trying to get everything done.
All right, so this is a serious question. I often kid you about painting kidneys and whatnot, but how many medical illustrators are there? Can you fill a Ramada with that number?
Oh, there are probably 2,000 or so.
Really?
Yeah. Plus, the numbers are growing because now there are a couple of graduate programs in Europe, and they're turning out medical illustrators with training. And those individuals, a lot of them are moving here or contacting me, asking me how to find work.
Oh, the benefits of a litigious society.
Yeah.
Now, in this day of robotic, non-invasive procedures, presumably you can get a camera in and take a picture of almost anything. Why is medical illustration still important?
Unfortunately, we're not in a visual medium here. I could show you that. I mean, you look at surgical photos and all you see are, blood and guts frequently, maybe some fat, maybe some bone. Medical illustrators do is you go beyond what the camera can see. You can make tissue transparent. You can take away tissue that you don't want there in order to show what's important.
I'm sorry, we're off topic, but I'm fascinated by this. When you want to do a painting or you're drawing,
illustration,
do you say, you call up your supply house and say, look, I need a liver now?
No, not quite.
Well, how do you do it?
Well, first of all, I've got an extensive anatomical and surgical background training. So a client will ask for something. They want to illustrate an operative procedure. I do a little bit of research on that if it's one I'm not familiar with, make sure I've got all the anatomy right, and began to sit down and draw whatever it's going to take in order to communicate whatever information it is that they specifically want to communicate.
And who is they?
whichever client. I mean, when I did a lot of commercial work, it might be a medical journal. I might be illustrating cover or inside art for a medical journal. If it was pharmaceutical, I might be doing advertising illustrations for pharmaceutical. Now I specialize in medical legal, so most of my clients are attorneys, but I still wind up working with the physician experts that are going to testify in their case.
That's a cool line of work.
I'm guessing that pays better than medical journals. Just
yes.
Take a look.
Said the lawyer. All right. News nonprofit sues ChatGPT maker OpenAI and Microsoft for exploitive copyright infringement. The Center for Investigative Reporting last month sued ChatGPT maker OpenAI and Microsoft. They say OpenAI used its content without permission and without offering compensation. Paul Rapp, we have been over this again and again. What's the latest?
Every one of these cases gets thrown out because they say they've illegally, and I'm not defending AI or the use of AI, but in this way, but they're not making copies. They might make an ephemeral copy on their server while they read it, and then it's gone. But they're not. It's not copyright infringement. I mean, there's been a lot of calls, and I think even some of the AI companies are telling Congress, write something into the copyright law or elsewhere that will regulate us before this gets out of hand. And it could be argued that it's out of hand right now, but it doesn't strike me as as copyright infringement.
Yeah. But, you know, the companies always say, oh, please regulate us, and knowing that nothing will get done.
Well, but Schumer and the Congress have just, what's it called, the Copy Act? Copied Act?
Oh, I've heard about this.
Yeah. I should have brought some information on it, but it was just announced yesterday or the day before, Monday. And it looks like they are serious about proposing something that's going to protect artists and authors
Good.
Specifically from having their work scraped and used. And they're going to change the law so that it'll be easier for artists and writers to sue if that work is used.
But not cheaper, right? I mean, that's really the thing when it comes to suing. It costs a lot of money.
Yeah, well, but if your work is registered.
If your work is registered, no, it doesn't cost a lot of money if you get somebody that works on a contingency.
I'd be very interested to see what that's all about. And the interesting thing is these are very bipartisan laws.
Correct.
I mean, I don't think anybody, Republican, conservative, MAGA, you know, or Democrat, you know, likes the prospect of what's happening with AI.
Yeah.
And so I think these, if they're well written and well explained, it could be a buffer.
It's going to be a process. It's not going to be something that's done instantaneously. I think the Bureau of Standards or something like that is going to be responsible for trying to develop a system that will involve some type of watermarking.
Not the Library of Congress through
no.
the Copyright Office?
No. There's going to be a separate type of law, I think. Again, I read a synopsis, and I'll try to remember to send it to both of you when I get back.
Oh, boy, studio. That's great.
Yeah, it won't help us for today, but we'll get it for
Sorry.
Next time. The Beastie Boys are suing the parent company of Chili's in a case that accuses the chain restaurant of running an advertisement that used the hip-hop trio's smash hit Sabotage without permission. This goes back, I think it was last week, the group in a federal case filed in New York alleged Brinker International created a Chili's ad that used significant portions of Sabotage and ripped off the song's music video. Let's go to our resident musician slash legal eagle Paul Rapp on this.
Yeah, I mean, how stupid can Chili's be? I mean, even if you're a casual follower of this, you know that the Beastie Boys don't allow their songs to be used in commercials, period. You know, Adam Yauch, who passed away, 10 years ago or so, had it in his will, you know. And see, why go there?
Well, I mean, this is a legal question, but he wasn't the only one in the group.
There was three of them.
But what, I mean, just if one person says, I don't want that, the other two can't say, well, this is a ostensibly a democracy, we overrule you. And yeah, you're dead, so you can't argue.
I suppose if they were all joint authors, the other ones would have the ability to do it. But and they, I think, are joint authors, but they probably are respecting as witches. I mean, yeah. it's not like those guys are hurting for dough.
Right, and they won't be if they win the suit, too.
That's right.
All right, last one, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll get to the phones. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551 if you have a copyright question for Bill Westwood, Paul Rapp, and Polly Law. This comes out of YourEerie.com. The largest recording companies in the world have filed a massive lawsuit against Verizon Communications, Verizon Services, and Cellco Partnership, a.k.a. Verizon Wireless. The plaintiffs claim that they both enabled and profited from the copyright infringement committed by tens of thousands of its subscribers. This is basically people who bootleg music and offer downloads and things like that, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, like I said before, I mean, are we in 2004 again? Is that what's going on? Because these were the kind of suits they used to bring all the time when there was massive downloading. And I'm thinking, who still downloads? I mean, I'm sure there are some people who do will go to BitTorrent and download the latest hits and all that stuff. But, you know, most people stream them because it's just easier. And so, I don't know where they're going with this. I mean, Verizon should have, under the law, they have to have protections in place where if somebody complains about copyright infringement, they've got to investigate it within 24 or 48 hours. I mean, they're bound by law. Otherwise, they're liable for the infringement that their customers are using. And I can't believe they were so lax, you know, as to just let this go
by. But how do you stop it? The plaintiffs are seeking as much as $150,000 per infringement, 17,000 alleged infringed songs. That totals about $2.6 billion. But, I mean, big names are involved. Madonna, The Beatles, Stevie Wonder, Fleetwood Mac. Mm-hmm. So they presumably have a little,
That'll never go to trial.
No?
I don't think so. No.
Well, but what could Verizon do, though, is my question.
Well, when they get a complaint, they don't have to do anything until they get a complaint. And once they get a complaint, they have a duty to investigate, to throw the person off, to throw the person off the system while they investigate, They seem to be alleging that they didn't do that.
Okay.
But, you know, I this is the first I heard of this suit, and it's, like I said, it's like a walk through memory lane, you know.
Let's take a quick break here. 800-348-2551. It's Paul Rapp. It's Bill Westwood. And it's Polly Law. It'll be you in a moment. We'll get to your calls. Ah, yes, lovely music. It's 800-348-2551. If you have a copyright question today, the gang's all here, nice and cool in Studio A. Polly Law is very happy right now. Well, happy-ish, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. And the email address is voxpop@wamc.org. We've got a few emails here, but I want to go to Larry in Dutchess County, who's been waiting about 20 minutes. Larry, go ahead.
Yeah, I had a question about photographs.
Okay.
Hang on, let me get you off speaker. I had a question about photography.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Took a photograph at one of the state parks, and there were two people in the picture. They're integral to the picture. Their faces are not visible. If I was making this photograph potentially for sale, would I need permission from the people?
If they're not immediately recognizable as specific people, they might as well be trees.
Yeah, and you photograph them in a public place.
Yeah, exactly.
Even if they were, you know, you couldn't put it on a box of Wheaties. You couldn't sell it as a commercial item, but if you were going to sell it, the photograph as an art piece, I think you're good to go.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, it's what I thought, but I wanted to be sure.
Yep.
Second question, do watermarks on photographs that are on the web or social media, are any of the, does the watermark actually really mean anything?
Well, it should distort the photo.
Technically, I would think a better way of protecting your work, though, is simply register it. That way, if somebody steals it, you have a strong option to go after them.
Yeah, that and don't put a super high-res version the photo online. So if it's something that's fairly small on your screen, if you blow it up, it's going to get all blurry and it'll be functionally useless.
All right, Larry.
Okay.
Well, thanks a lot for the call. Appreciate it. 800-348-2551. That's the number. 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Here's a thorny one for you, gang. This is from Christine. Art writing is the subject heading. My question is, saith Christine, myself and five other artists founded an online arts magazine. The woman who's still running the magazine kind of elbowed everybody else out after we wrote there for approximately 5 years. None of us got paid. Our articles are still available online. She has a copyright circle on each article. Do we, the writers, have the rights to republish, say we want to make a book, or does she? And that's from Christine.
Yeah, if there's no, unless there's a contract originally to the contrary, those writers own the copyright to those works and can do with them whatever they please.
Yeah, and the publication has the right to publish it the first time.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then they can republish it in the same format.
Right.
But I don't think she'd be able to bundle all of your works and put them in a book.
I don't think so.
Because that's a different format. That was Ticini, right?
The Ticini case. I think so, yeah. So I would... If you have real concerns, first thing I'd do is register the work. Then I would speak to a copyright attorney if you had any concerns.
All right. This is from Judy. Judy B. Does self-publishing on Substack offer any protections with regard to writing? At the bottom of each post, it has copyright, then the name that I entered when I set up the account.
No.
That's from Judy.
No.
Really?
I don't know much about Substack, but
I mean, you own the copyright, but
it's not registered.
And so if it's not registered, you can't go out and defend the copyright should somebody rip you off. But I guess it would establish the first date of publication, or
that would be like mailing it to yourself.
But it is publication, so it does trigger all that publishing stuff. So if you're afraid, and if you contribute regularly on Substack, you can do a serial registration where you can register it, multiple articles with one application. So it becomes a bargain.
Number here is 800-348-2551. It's the Copyright Forum today with Polly Law, Bill Westwood, and Paul Rapp. Let's go to Washingtonville in Orange County. Roger, you're on.
Hi, hello. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet. Hey, Raj, just one second. If possible, can you get off speakerphone? It sounds much better to everybody listening at home.
I'll try.
Okay, if you can't, you can't. But, Zach the engineer would appreciate it. Okay.
Better.
I can't hear you without the speaker.
Zach is holding his head in his hands. I'm sorry I brought it up. You can do whatever you want, Roger.
thanks for taking this call.
You bet.
And you're dealing with an 89-year-old coot. So, you have to excuse my bumbling.
You got
as
it,
we go along.
No problem.
Okay. All right. A couple of months ago, I was notified by Etsy. I have some of my work. I'm an artist and sculptor for many years. That one of my products that I've created is taken off of Etsy because I've been accused of violating the intellectual property rights of this product that's being made now by a company called Timeline Brands Incorporated, and the subsidiary is Fred. And now this is a minor product that I have, but it's been taken off the listing because of this accusation. Now, the thing is, I've been making this in regards to a hair clip that I had designed utilizing mussel shells and making it look like a cockroach. So it was like a cockroach hair clip, but I called it roach clip. And I think this is a, so now I think this is the reason why this company has attacked me in regards, because they now making a roach clip, a bag clip, and they're calling it roach clip.
Ah.
Now, they claim that I'm violating a design patent that's dated 2020. And it's particularly just on, the design patent is on a bag clip, but it happens to have a roach, a rubber roach on that bag clip.
Okay.
And I could prove that I had been doing my roach clip made with a mussel shell since 1980. And right. I can verify it. I've had it on online on different different sites, POD sites, and other sites since 2009.
Okay.
So I could prove that I've done this product that I've been making goes way back. And now I got the Better Business Bureau involved with this thing, and they sent my complaint back and did not get response from this company. And so they gave up on it. You know, so I don't know, just it's not a matter of money, because it's a minor product that I have. It's a matter of integrity.
We got you. All right, let's go to our attorney first, and then we'll bat it around a little bit, Roger.
Etsy's usually pretty good about this stuff. I've put strike claims, and they're very responsive, as they were with yours. But they should give you the ability to appeal their ruling, at which point you can show them that you actually made these roach clips before this company did in 2020. And that should be your get out of jail free card, I would think.
Also, roach clip is hardly a new term that this company came up with.
Well, I think they're talking about the design of
He's using mussel shells and
well, beyond that, look, Roger, if you can't get any satisfaction otherwise, I would recommend you get in touch with a copyright attorney and allow them to intercede on your behalf, because it sounds like you have a very strong case.
Now, first of all, Etsy will not deal with it. I have to deal with the company itself. And I've been trying to contact Lifetime Brands Incorporated, and they will not respond.
That's why you need an attorney.
And they never respond. So I've gotten no response from anybody in regards to this.
Okay. Well, Roger, thank you. Yeah, I guess that's the answer on that one.
Get in touch with an attorney, Roger.
But isn't that a trademark issue? Do they trademark the name Roach Clip?
It's a design patent.
A design patent, which I can't believe they would get a patent for a roach clip. Sounds like you're back to seeds and stems again, Raj.
Okay. Let's go. Thank you for that. Let's go to Hyde Park. And Greg, you're on.
Hello. I had a question. A few weeks ago, PCM screened what they call a very rare showing of the movie Looking for Mr. Goodbar, which is from 1977, I believe. And apparently it hasn't been available on DVD or via screening, although I think it was out on VHS at one time years ago. But apparently it has to do with the licensing for the soundtrack songs. They used a lot of disco songs from that era. And I'm thinking, so many movies have no problem being screened or streamed or whatever. I'm wondering what could possibly be so unique about the music used in Looking for Mr. Goodbar.
I think basically because it's music that, you know, came out. I mean, it was some disco and there was classic rock. The music has appreciated value-wise a lot since the movie came out. And the licenses they probably got for the original movie probably didn't include a lot of reproduction, which is why they can't do it. The same thing happened with WKRP in Cincinnati when they decided they wanted to start syndicating that and putting that out on VHS and DVDs. I mean, that was wall-to-wall classic rock music. And by the time they got around to it, you know, to license a Journey song or a Foreigner song or, you know, a Hall & Oates song, it's become precipitously expensive. So I think that's probably what's going on with that without, you know, knowing more.
So would TCM have special privileges in order to screen it at all, or did they just pay up?
They may be part of a conglomerate that owns the rights to the music.
They probably are, and I think displaying it on television, you know, is different than streaming and stuff like that. It's a little bit different. So that may actually have, you know, squeaked through with the original licenses, but I don't know.
All right, well, good question. Thanks, Greg. Appreciate it. Yeah. 800-348-2551. Copyright forum in progress here. Polly Law, Bill Westwood, and Paul Rapp are ready to take your questions. And we'll go to Saratoga Springs. Peter, you're on.
Hey, how's everybody doing out there?
Great.
I have been in the process of retiring for a while.
Congrats.
And I'm trying to put my education from the Crane School of Music to good use. So I've been creating a live sound audio engineering course, and ultimately I want to create curriculum for different audiences. So in this digital age, I wanted to just get a primer as to where to start doing the copywriting, and you've talked about registering. So if you give me a quick primer on registration, and of course I have to end by saying, in this weather, I want to be a lifeguard.
There we are.
Very good.
All right, so who wants first?
Well, first you need to go to copyright.gov and take a little tour of what kind of options are available to you for registering copyright. There's visual copyrights, there's music copyrights, there's textual copyrights, there's packages, there's serials, there's
audiovisual.
Audiovisual. So I would start with a tour of what's available.
And where would you do that?
They have a good tutorial as well.
Copyright.gov.
Okay.
They have a good tutorial to walk you through how to actually do the copyright, regardless of the form you're using. I would think you'd use a textual.
Mm-hmm. If he's doing video, are you doing videos or are you doing a book?
More instructional. So I would say initially it would be a book, you know, PDF type of thing. But ultimately, to be able to then have video content to support like the teacher's version, that would be the longer term goal.
Yeah, I mean, so you'll be able to figure out which category comes in by whatever it is you're trying to.
But
to
wouldn't you copyright those separately? The visuals from the arcade?
Not really. I think if you have an audio visual work,
you can include it.
Get everything. Yeah, everything would be in there.
Because with a PDF, you could embed links to audio files online.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Okay.
But it's a little bit, you know, I won't say it's easy, but if you work at it a little bit, it's not insurmountable by any stretch.
Yeah. Once you have a couple under your belt.
Yeah.
You know, you'll know how to navigate the site.
Yeah. So. Copyright.gov.
Copyright.gov. Peter, thanks for the call. We'll do an email here before we take a break. The number is 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Henry writes in, can you copyright a saying on a T-shirt?
No.
Unless it's a very long saying.
Well, how long does the saying have to be?
That 3 pages.
No. Okay.
More than a T-shirt can hold.
Really?
Yeah.
If there's an elaborate design element on the T-shirt, maybe get that.
Yeah.
But, you know, generally
short words or phrases, you can't.
Yeah, a short phrase, you can. I mean, I had that last week where a guy had a buzzword. He was a contestant on a reality show, and he gave an answer that suddenly, like, became a meme. And he's, you know, how can I protect this? And it's like, start a clothing company named after that meme and sell clothing. Yeah. I mean, I think that's what you got to do.
Yeah, trademark it.
That's an expensive way to go. Let's take a break here. 800-348-2551. We'll get to your calls on the other side of this break. Polly Law, Bill Westwood, and Paul Rapp. We'll be back in a moment. There it is, Red Baron, the old Billy Cobham number from the Soul Jazz Unit. I think they're out of Italy, if I'm not mistaken. Great record, though. Hey, I think it's called, what's the name of the album? Paul, help me out here. You have no idea. Fair enough. Just throwing it out there. I think it's called Old School something or other.
It's not Snoopy versus the Red Baron?
No, by... that the Red Baron's an old song. That's from the 70s. It's like a funk slash, I don't know, fusion-y kind of song.
Who did Snoopy versus the Red Baron? The Royal Guardsman. Yeah, the Royal Guardsman.
What the heck? What is this? Name that tune? All right.
Bill Westwood for the win.
All right. It's ostensibly the copyright
Camel,
for him.
But that wasn't right.
Polly Law is here, past president of the Graphic Artists Guild. Bill Westwood is here, who is a member of and a past president of the Association of Medical Illustrators. Paul Rapp is an intellectual property lawyer and writer. The number is 800-348-2551. And let's go back to our phones, and it's Susan. Susan, you go ahead.
Hi there. I am working with two colleagues in India who are putting online a course for teachers. So it would be a paid thing for them. It's based on my book, for which I have the copyright. If they decide to sell the whole project to a third party, what would be an appropriate royalty for me to get from that company?
First of all, have you registered the copyright to your work?
It's based on the book that is published by Heinemann, and I have the copyright for that book.
You have it registered.
Well, I assume that the publishing house registered it.
Never assume.
Yeah, did they have work for hire agreements with these folks in India?
Oh no! It has nothing to do with that. No, the book was done in 1998, and this is all something that's just recent.
Oh, so it's all over the damp. So, so they want to know. You want to know what percentage royalty?
I want to know what would be a fair. Yeah, from this third party, because we're writing up the contract now. It's not like there's a third party in the wing yet, but I just want to protect myself in the future in case someone, let's say it takes off and there's an educational company that wants to buy this course, and we'll have a much wider distribution than we do. What would be fair for me to put into the contract that I would want this third party to pay 5%?
What's fair and what you can get them to pay might be different things.
Yeah,
12% is typically the amount that a publisher will pay to an author for writing a book. However, the question becomes, what are they basing that 12% on? Are they basing that 12% on the sale price of the book? Are they basing that price on the price of the book after they deduct expenses? I mean, you really need to have a knowledgeable copyright attorney or agent to work with you on this, because there's so many potential pitfalls.
And the percentages can be all over the place, depending on the market, depending on the publisher, depending on the, you know, and so, you know, 12 is, I think 12 is a good rule of thumb, but they can go precipitously higher and lower depending on who you're dealing with.
Of course. Yeah. But again, I think you're going to need someone knowledgeable to help you negotiate that deal.
Yeah. Right. Now, if that happens, do they then own the material?
Not necessarily. It depends on your contract.
Yeah, it's going to be a matter of contract. Yeah,
If I were you, I would want to retain ownership, copyright ownership.
Yes, I do. I do want to do that.
But I would back way up, and I would check with your original publisher and make sure that that work is actually registered with the Copyright Office, because I've been working with some people who put out books, and even though the publisher was supposed to register them, they did not register them. And now these people are having their works ripped off, and they have no recourse.
Yeah. My experience has been about
50%. Is there a way for me to do it directly through the Copyright Office, or is it online? Can I just, like, find out if my book's registered?
Well,
yes.
Yeah.
Or I have to ask the publisher.
They are actually trying to come up with a new system to allow this. I personally haven't been involved in it and haven't had to use it, but I would certainly look there first. The other thing you can do is actually call the Copyright Office. I typically recommend people call them Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday. Mondays and Fridays tend to be the busiest from my experience.
Yeah.
And they're very good. They're very friendly. And they will help you answer those questions.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Excellent. Thank you so much.
Good
appreciate
luck.
It.
Okay.
Thanks, Susan. Appreciate the call. 800-348-2551. It's Bill Westwood, Paul Rapp at Poly Law, here to answer your questions about intellectual property. And let's go to Pine Plain. And Stan, you're on. Hello, Stan.
Oh, thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
Yep.
My question concerns film. A friend of mine asked me to act in a film that he's producing, which is an extremely unofficial, unaffiliated sequel to a well-known film. It seems like murky territory in terms of copyright infringement, and I'm wondering if I would have personal liability as an actor participating in such a project.
Well, if you write your contract with an indemnification clause in it, you're good to go.
Yeah, you shouldn't be. I mean, the producers and possibly the directors should be in the, you know, in the line of fire. But as an actor, I don't think so. But they are treading on thin ice with the whole premise.
Might they be able to sneak in under the fan fiction kind of rubric?
Fan fiction.
That's still the discretion of the copyright holder, whether they allow fan fiction or not. So, you know, it could be problematic to do a sequel, which is basically an unauthorized derivative work of the original.
Stan.
Incredible. We know what we're getting into, though. Not me.
Oh, God. Well, thank you very much for the call, and good luck. By the way, the Roach Clip conversation, which is right now being sent to the Broadcasting Hall of Fame, is...
it's burning up the Internet.
Roger sent an email, which I'm going to hand around to you. Apparently had a design patent on this thing.
Roger
so,
does.
Yeah. So here, I'll send you the... You take my phone, and you guys can pass it around. So there, he says, here it is. They're so cool. These are hair clips that look like roaches made with shells, and they're really cool. And apparently he shows the patent on that. So
I wonder if his patent is still
patents
so valid. Don't last for that long.
17 years, I think
so,
it is.
Yeah.
No, I think that was a 2010 patent. I think it says in the bottom of his email.
I thought he said the people that got him thrown off claimed a design patent.
Oh, is that what it is? Oh, yeah. I understand that.
Yeah, that's what he said.
I could have been wrong, but okay.
So maybe he doesn't. All right, let's go back to the phones then. 800-348-2551, and we'll go to Gabe in Great Barrington. Gabe, how you doing?
Hey, Ray, love the show. I listen to you every day.
Thanks.
I got a question about... Certificate of Authenticity, is that in your guys' ballpark?
Somewhat. Yeah. I deal with them, yeah.
It's in outfield.
All right. My grandfather was the doctor of the Norman Rockwell paintings, and I had Norman Rockwell's last cane that he was seen in photographs with.
Uh-huh.
I brought it to the museum a long time ago before I moved to St. John in the Virgin Islands, and they gave me a piece of paper that said, if the Norman Rockwell Museum burns down, they owe me $70,000. But I didn't get a certificate of authenticity. Do I need one to go get that cane back? Or do I just sell? Can I sell it without an authenticity form? Or
provenance,
I'm a little confused. I thought this was a different show. You guys were talking about roach clips. Isn't that silly?
Yeah. You bet you do, but it's silly.
Hey, we cover a wide range of things.
It's a good thing this isn't Chris from Housatonic, and arms are glad I didn't say banana.
Hey, man, he'll be calling soon enough. So, all right, so what do you think?
Okay, I'm sure he will.
Is the cane at the Rockwell Museum right now?
It is, in the basement, in the archives.
I would ask someone there to issue, I mean, if it's verifiable that it belonged to Norman Rockwell.
Well, it has Norman burned into the handle, and my grandfather, Dr. Campbell, did not know another Norman. He was his doctor. They played cards together.
Right. But if you have somebody from the museum issue a certificate of authenticity, then you're good to go. And and I don't see why they wouldn't
get it appraised and I'll get it certified.
But
that's interesting.
Do you want to get it back so you can sell it? Is that the
I'd prefer to
ultimate?
Hold on to it now that I know that it's really valuable, probably now.
Yeah. So, yeah. But you want to get it back from the museum.
I kind of do, yeah.
But it's in their interest to authenticate all kinds of Rockwell stuff, and I don't see why they wouldn't do this. I don't know what their policies are.
Well, did they pay you when you, or was it a donation?
No, that was the weirdest thing. I forget what that piece of paper was called. It was just a guarantee that if it was damaged or lost,
well, I think
fire or stolen, then they owe me money for it. So it's got to be worth something.
So
they
it's still yours.
Me that if it was,
but I would have, I would approach them and try to get it back, or try to get the certificate of authenticity first. Then I would come back and say, I've decided I would like to get it back. In other words, don't forewarn them.
So I just let them borrow it, in other words. Yes,
yeah,
I did. Okay, this is all making sense now.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. All right, well, thanks, guys. I don't want to take up too much time.
Hey, man, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. 800-348-2551 is the number.
I really want to go to the Norman Rockwell Museum in the next couple of months to see the Mad Magazine exhibit.
Yeah, no kidding.
I mean, that just sounds...
I think Joe Donahue did a segment there, or Will Soon. Is it open yet? I know he was talking about it.
Yeah. One of my friend of mine has a lot of art in that.
Yeah.
Exhibit.
Cool.
Yes.
Yeah. Cool. That's really cool. Yeah. Well, let's go to Roberta in Hudson. Roberta, you're on.
Hey there. How you guys doing today?
Yeah, pretty good. How are you?
Good. And guys means men and women.
10-4.
No
offense to the ladies.
Understood.
Hey, so I just happened to tune in when someone asked the question about copywriting something on a T-shirt, and somebody said something about 3 pages long to copyright it. But I'm wondering, what about copywriting poetry?
Yeah, 3 pages might be a little bit.
I was exaggerating a wee bit.
A little bit of hyperbole, but yeah, you can certainly copyright. I mean, I had a student once do a paper on this. At one point, you know, the thing can get so minimal that even though it's original, it's so minimal there's no copy. But as a general matter, yeah, I mean, the poets register their stuff all the time.
But what about a haiku?
Yeah. Exactly. Like, what about something as short as a haiku, or, you know, even just a sonnet, you know, short things?
You probably can. They'll tell you if you can't.
That's the nice thing about the Copyright Office. If they have an issue with it, they'll let you know.
After you pay the fee or before?
After you pay the fee.
Well, that's ridiculous.
But if you want to appeal it, then you're talking money. I mean, it's like $400 to file an appeal, you know, but...
Mm. Okay. Does that help at all?
They would give me that information if I went to copyright.gov.
I think if you look at they have a whole bunch of circulars that explain the law in some detail.
I would suggest what I did a few minutes ago: pick up the phone and call them, and they will tell you
the Copyright Office.
Oh yeah,
can you
great.
Get through to somebody?
Absolutely,
sure.
I call them fairly frequently.
They're good.
Huh.
And they pick up the phone. They
probably
Westwood
say, "Oh God, it's Westwood again."
It's Westwood again. No, I recommend that you do it between Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday because they tend to be, from my experience, less busy then.
But I think that you would have better luck if you had a collection of poetry that you were going to register as a group.
Right. Right. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot for the call, Roberta. Appreciate it. This email from Karen at voxpop@wamc.org. There's also still time to get a call in here in the waning moments, 800-348-2551. Karen writes, I am soon launching a website with a new body of artwork, digital, but hand-created, never before published. All have my signature, but I have not included a copyright sign on any unless I re-upload them before launching the site. Is it enough to say somewhere on the website that all artwork is copyrighted in my name? I felt that it looked too commercial to put the copyright sign in the body of the artwork, as the signature is in script writing and fairly prominent. Also, is it true that I can only protect 10 images at a time, even if in a series? And that's from Karen.
No. You can only register 10 images at a time.
Unpublished.
You can protect the whole thing, and I would think a copyright notice on the site would be sufficient.
Yeah.
Any issue.
Yeah, I always put a grayed out, an almost totally transparent copyright notice on web images.
Yeah, I've found that if people really want to rip you off, they don't pay any attention whether it's
And you don't need to deface your art to declare that you own
That's true. Yeah, yeah. After 1980 or 82, what it was.
Yeah,
it,
you don't have to.
You don't need to put a notice on. So I would think that your notice on the website alone would be sufficient. I again would recommend registering it.
Mm-hmm. Especially if you're putting it online.
Registering works.
Registering the
Individual.
I think you can register the site and get some protection.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I can register a book
And
get protection without registering each individual image.
But I think they're going to consider the site one work.
Correct.
That's going to be the...
That's the problem if you should sue. So in the long run, you're better off, even if you have to do it a little bit here and a little bit there, to register all the works individually.
Ten at a time.
And if you're not offering the work for sale on your website, then you can register them as unpublished.
Mm. Okay.
If you're selling things on your website, it gets murky, but then it's considered published.
Yeah.
All right.
Because you're offering copies to the general.
Right.
But if you do it before, if you register before you post them, before you put it up,
yes.
Yeah. You're,
or
you're,
if you just tell the copyright office, these are unpublished.
Correct.
It's not like they're going to.
Are you suggesting something unethical,
no,
Paul Rudd?
Of course not. Not on this show.
A
no.
lawyer suggesting something? Oh, how dare you.
I shall retire to Bedlam. By the way, Roger sent another picture. I think we can all agree that Roger needs to maybe find a copyright attorney. Yeah?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes.
And I think he's got a very strong case, but he needs somebody to run interference for him.
You know, I got to say, there's his hair clips. They're absolutely, they make your skin crawl. I mean, they're so cool. It's
they
great.
Are.
Yeah,
they are
it
really
looks
cool.
like a giant cockroach on your head.
Way to go, like Roger.
Talk about an icebreaker.
Something Wednesday Adams would wear.
Exactly. That's a great idea. All right, let's grab one more call here before we wrap it. Chris in Savoy. Chris.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Nice.
Thanks for taking the call.
You bet.
So I am a content creator. I make YouTube videos and I write blogs and things like that. And I'm concerned about AI sort of training their models on some of my content. And I'm wondering if your panelists know where that stands and if there's anything that I can do as a content creator to protect myself.
Copyright and register your work.
But even then.
That's pretty much. Unfortunately, none of us know where this AI thing is going.
Yeah, I mean, all the lawsuits there that are claiming copyright infringement for using stuff online for training have been thrown out. But Bill said that there's a new bunch of bills in Congress that are going to kind of close that gap or going to
potentially try to.
Yeah.
So keep your eye on that. I mean, it's not going to happen
tomorrow. Called the Copied, C-O-P-I-E-D. Act.
Yeah.
You can look it up.
And that
great. Thank you so much.
Yep.
I mean, you guys seem very cool about AI. You know, everyone seems pretty relaxed about it.
No, but what the heck can I do about it?
How long can you keep your undies in a total bundle here?
That's
for Medical Monday, and frankly, we don't have time for that.
You know,
one today.
We're facing the end of democracy. AI is not, you know.
And that's
number
also another show, which I'm sure is coming up here on WMC. Yeah. All right, people. Hey, Bill Westwood, thanks. How do people find you online?
Westwood at copyright.net.
All right. Paul Rapp.
Paul at paulrapp.com.
And Polly Law.
Well, I'm on Instagram at artwordst.
Okay.
There you go.
Thank you all for being here. Support comes from Plaza Travel Center, featuring the French Riviera, 7 nights in Nice, October 10th from Albany. For travel details, 518-785-3338. Chesterwood, the Gilded Age home and studio of sculptor Daniel Chester French in Stockbridge, presenting Shakespeare and Company director Tina Packer's open rehearsal of The Winter's Tale, July 20th at 5, chesterwood.org. And the Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, featuring works by American artists, including Gilbert Stuart, Winslow Homer, Child Hassam, and William Merritt Chase, arkellmuseum.org. Once again, thanks to Bill, Polly, and Law Polly Atlaw, Polly and Paul, for being here. Thank you for listening. It's time for Happy Nappy. Thanks to Zach, our engineer. Ed Rosen screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow it's Travel with Gene Gagnon.